Hey, it's Mark here, and welcome to the next edition of the Employee Survival Guide, where I tell you, as always, what your employer does definitely not want you to know about, and a lot more. Hey, it's Mark, and welcome back. Today's episode is the big win for employees, proven discrimination. The job transfer now equals some harm. Employers have notoriously used the job transfer to a lateral position or assigned an employee to work project work, only to lay them off within a year. I tell clients this is the proverbial writing on the wall for them to, quote, get the heck out, you are not welcomed here any longer. If the employee becomes frustrated enough, they quit and find other employment. That's the point of the employer's default, this default management strategy. The benefit to the employer is simple. The employee resigns and cannot collect unemployment benefits because they quit, saving the employer money. Employers also use job transfers to discriminate based upon sex, among other protected classifications. For example, transferring a female police officer in a high-level position to a lesser desirable position in favor of a male officer. For years, employees have had to prove some form of, quote, significant harm or significant adverse harm when proving discrimination cases in federal employment law cases. Employees were routinely unable to successfully convince courts that a transfer was a material adverse action to support a discrimination claim. Thanks to a new Supreme Court decision, employees were given a new tool to combat discrimination of any form. On April 17, 2024, the U.S. Supreme Court issued a unanimous decision in the case of Muldrow versus City of St. Louis, Missouri. There, a female police officer named Jechonya Claiborne brought a discrimination case against the city, alleging sex discrimination in violation of Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, after she was transferred. The lower courts denied her relief, but the Supreme Court fashioned a new, lower standard of proof, making it far easier for employees to combat discrimination of any form just by showing factual proof that, quote, some harm occurred in the terms, conditions, and privileges of their employment, substantially motivated by, in this case, her sex. Presumably, other forms of adverse employment actions will also qualify under this same lower standard of proof. The Supreme Court had to resolve a dispute among the lower courts that imposed a much higher burden of proof on employees claiming discrimination. Previously, employees had to show a, quote, significant harm when they received a job transfer of any kind that did not result in loss of salary or bonus compensation. This was an impossible burden to many employees and their employment lawyers, like myself. The basis of the court's rationale to rule in favor of Officer Muldrow was the phrase significant harm, which appeared nowhere in the text of Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. And the court borrowed, in this case Justice Kagan, a tactic from the conservative textualist judge's playbook. Justice Kagan was appointed by President Obama. Justice Kagan wrote for the court, quote, Sergeant Tanya Claiborne Muldrow maintains that her employer, the St. Louis Police Department, transferred her from one job to another because she is a woman. She sued the City of St. Louis under Title VII, alleging that she had suffered sex discrimination with respect to the terms or conditions of her employment. The courts below rejected the claim on the ground that the transfer did not cause Muldrow a significant employment disadvantage. Other courts have used similar standards in addressing Title VII suits arising from job transfers. Today, we disprove that approach. Although an employee must show some harm for a forced transfer to prevail in a Title VII lawsuit, she need not show that the injury satisfies the significance test. Title VII's text nowhere establishes that high bar. Justice Kagan continued, Muldrow need only show some injury respecting her employment terms and conditions. The transfer must have left her worse off, but need not have left her significantly so. And Muldrow's allegations, if properly preserved, supported, meet that test with a room to spare, the court said. Recall her principal allegations. She was moved from a plainclothes job in a prestigious specialized division, which was deputized as a task force officer with the FBI, giving her substantial responsibility over priority investigations and frequent opportunity to work with police commanders. She was moved to a uniform job supervising one district's patrols officers, in which she was less involved in high visibility matters and primarily performed administrative work. Her schedule became less regular, often requiring her to work weekends, and she lost her take-home car. If those allegations are proved, the court said, she was left worse off several times over. The court said, it does not matter, as the courts below thought, and Justice Thomas echoes in his concurring opinion, that her rank and pay remain the same, or that she still could advance to other jobs. The court said Title VII prohibits making a transfer based on sex with the consequences Muldrow described, end quote. This decision, in my opinion, is a huge blow to employers. Hooray! We need a win for employees, don't we? The job transfer or project work tactic is ubiquitous in the workplace, which I have identified as a default management strategy designed to force employees to quit, among other things. Now, under this lesser burdensome standard, the employee only has to factually demonstrate, quote, some harm caused by the transfer to project work assignment. Yes, this will open, or should I say unlock, the previously dammed up number of cases, as the Supreme Court's concurring opinion noted, and I say let the flood begin in earnest. Better yet, employees must now argue they experience, quote, some harm in any employment discrimination case, not just job transfer or project work cases. This decision helps tip the scales back in favor of employees who challenge employers claiming discrimination based on sex, age, sexual orientation, race, national origin, disability, religion, and retaliation, among to name a few. That is why the decision is such a big deal for employees and will directly help employees argue for better treatment, better severance packages, and prove unlawful discrimination in court. Just as an end note to this discussion, the items that people experience in terms of their work that we want to label them as adverse employment actions can include a performance improvement plan or a negative performance review. Typically, these two categories of adverse action, if you want to call them, weren't adverse actions unless, and as the Second Circuit has noted in prior cases and other circuits around the country, that the PIP and the performance review were connected to the termination. And it's up to the employee to demonstrate that the PIP and the negative performance review were motivated by bias against them for whatever protected classification they had. It appears now, given like, using these two examples of performance improvement plans and negative performance reviews, that the court has lowered the bar for employees across the country to argue that some harm occurred to them, meaning if you had a negative review or a PIP, that's significant enough, but not the significance test that the court had identified. Some harm had occurred when you get a negative review. It could be argued that some harm has occurred because, you know, you're getting a negative review. What if you get a negative review and you lose access to a bonus because the bonus program says you have to meet certain thresholds? Or if you're on a PIP, that some companies have policies that say that if you receive a PIP, you're not going to qualify for a bonus. Or you're not going to qualify for a raise. Or I've seen this actually happen most often is that you cannot transfer or get a promotion, because you were put on a PIP or received a negative review. So the bar has lowered down. You have to understand the politics of the court in this case. It is a unanimous decision with some concurring opinions. It was written by Justice Kagan. And oftentimes the court will do this when they want to get some other decision with Justice Kagan to vote for. So maybe this was Justice Kagan's pet project to rifle through and get the court to agree. But you won't really know that because the court doesn't really describe or discuss how it internally deliberates these cases, but you can kind of read between the lines. So a new tool for us to use in our review of our cases as we try to figure out what had happened to us even before the adverse event takes place, but the bar is lowered. And that's a good thing for employees these days because they need all the help they can get given this one-sided, very dysfunctional employment relationship they have with their employer. So with that said, Have a great week. I'll talk to you soon.
If you like the Employee Survival Guide, I'd really encourage you to leave a review. We try really hard to produce information to you that's informative, that's timely, that you can actually use and solve problems on your own and at your employment. So if you'd like to leave a review anywhere you listen to our podcast, please do so. And leave 5 stars because anything less than 5 is really not as good, right? I'll keep it up. I'll keep the standards up. I'll keep the information flowing at you. If you'd like to send me an email and ask me a question, I'll actually review it and post it on there. You can send it to mcarey@capclaw.com. That's capclaw.com.